From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
Going to the park or a picnic was 25, 30 people, and everybody potlucking and everybody parenting everybody else's kids. That's what family is to me. Family first and family forever.
Mi familia, my family. It means something different for all of us, and as the basic unit of society, how we define the family has a profound effect on how we interact with each other. In California, same-sex couples can now legally marry, and the definition of the family is also changing.
It's reinforcing what marriage is about. It's about love. It's about people being together, deciding to live a long life together.
On today's program, we take a look at how same-sex couples are starting new families with marriage and adoption. And some country music from Cuba, El Guajiro, Eliades Ochoa. Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Stay with us. Joining us to discuss the news affecting the Latino community is Maria Elena Salinas, national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. Hello, Maria Elena.
Hello, Lakshmi. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too. Well, let's start with this. Justice Department officials, they're looking into a proposed policy of allowing the FBI to rely on a terrorist profile when they're investigating Americans. Can you shed a little background on what happened here?
Well, basically, the Justice Department is considering changing the role of the FBI. They want to change them from a crime-fighting agency to one that protects the country from terrorists or from terrorist attacks. But in the process, Lakshmi, it seems that they're opening up a Pandora's box with changes that could potentially infringe on U.S. citizens' rights. For example, one of the things they're considering is allowing the FBI to investigate Americans without any kind of an evidence of wrongdoing. They want to base their investigation on racial profiling, their ethnicity, their racial background. They also want to consider where people have traveled to, if they have had access to weapons or to any kind of military training. So, you know, basically the Justice Department is saying that, you know, it's doing exactly what Congress expected them to do after the 9/11 terrorist attacks, which is to detect potential terrorist activities before they happen.
Well, Maria Elena, we know that Senator McCain was recently touring Latin America. He traveled to Colombia and Mexico. What did he do while he was there?
Well, he went to Colombia and to Mexico for very short trips. He was in Colombia 2 days and in Mexico less than 24 hours. And, you know, the message was clearly intended for voters in the U.S., for Latino voters, that he's more in tune with the issues that affect the Latin American region more so than his opponent, Barack Obama. Now, when he was in Colombia, he emphasized the importance of the free trade agreement with that country. That's something that he's been doing. That's something that the Bush administration has been doing nonstop. And let's remember that, you know, Democrats in Congress are opposed to this trade agreement. Senator Obama has clearly also expressed an opposition to it, not because they oppose free trade agreement in general, but in the particular case of Colombia, they claim that there has been several assassinations of union leaders, and they would like for that to be cleared up before they approve any kind of free trade agreement. They already have approved one with a recent one with Peru. Now, coincidence or not, McCain's visit coincided with the release of Ingrid Betancourt and three American hostages and several other hostages by the FARC. So McCain was able to emphasize that this is a time to support that country and its leader, Alvaro Uribe, instead of opposing it. Now, when it comes to Mexico, that's a totally different issue. The issue there is the border, and it is a point of contention between Mexico and the U.S. And Senator McCain continues to stress the importance of having the border open for business but closed for undocumented immigrants. And it's a very delicate issue for McCain because he co-sponsored the immigration reform bill with Ted Kennedy and now is supporting border security first, Lakshmi. So, you know, this is, like I said, a delicate issue for him, not only with his relations with Mexico but also with Latino voters.
Both McCain and Democratic presidential nominee Barack Obama are vying for Latino support. Both spoke at a Lula convention in Washington recently. An important question in all this seems to be, what do Latinos want now? Former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez answered that question in the LA Times. But what impression did this make, if any, within the Latino community?
Well, I read the column, Lakshmi, and what Gonzalez is saying in that column basically is that Latinos don't want to be taken for granted and that no party can take them for granted. You know, he's recognizing what even polls are saying, and that is that race is an issue in this presidential race, and that it's going to continue to be an issue. And he's reminding us that in that piece that it doesn't only mean the racial divide between black and white, but also with Latinos. And, you know, once again, the Latino vote is going to be very important in several swing states in November. And in order to get that vote, the candidates are going to have to go beyond talking about the immigration issue. That's one of the things that he's emphasizing. You know, there's other issues that Latinos care about: the economy, education, health care, and, of course, the war in Iraq.
Okay, well, thanks so much for speaking with us, Maria Elena.
It's my pleasure, Lakshmi. Nice to talk to you.
Maria Elena Salinas is the national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. It's Latino USA. I'm Lakshmi Singh, in for Maria Hinojosa. On May 15, 2008, the California Supreme Court made a historic ruling overturning a ban on same-sex marriage. In doing so, California became the second state to constitutionally guarantee the right to marry for gay and lesbian couples. California is also home to the country's largest Latino population, and the ruling is already having an impact on the community there. For more, we're joined now by Coral Lopez, a director with Bienestar, a grassroots community organization in Southern California, and by Bridget Gonzalez, a resident of Los Angeles currently planning her wedding. Welcome to you both.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So, Coral, we'll start with you. We know that there is a large Latino population in California, but is there a large gay population among Latinos?
Oh, yes. You know, in California, according to the last census, it's estimated that there are about 90,000 gay and lesbian couples, and 45,000 of those are Latinos. And what is most important to remember and to know is that the gay and lesbian Latino couples are most likely than any other ethnic group to be raising children within their households. It's estimated that there are approximately 30,000 Latino children being raised in same-sex couples here in California. So this ruling and the sense of respect, dignity, and justice that it brings to these families is very important for the Latino community.
Let's talk about first some of the stereotypes that generally gay and lesbian couples encounter. Since we're talking about Latinos specifically, how are they accepted within the Latino community as a whole?
What we saw shortly after the decision and the weddings that took place a couple of weeks ago here in California, we saw a lot of Latinos just being very matter-of-fact of like, well, it's no big deal. You know, it wasn't like the end of the world was coming because now we had same-sex marriage. And what we also saw was we saw that people were excited about the economic impact it was going to have on their lives. Latinos here in California, like in most of the parts of the U.S., are the main ones working jobs at flower shops, bakeries, at catering. All these businesses benefited from the weddings and are continuing to benefit from the weddings that are happening throughout the summer. And so what we saw and what we heard from the community was a welcoming of these weddings because of the economic situation we're all in.
Bridget, what was it like growing up in a family that may or may not have known that you were homosexual?
You know, my mother had a very hard time with it when I did come out to her. I really had no idea what was going on for me until about high school when I really came to be able to define that I was gay or a lesbian. And my dad, I think he's always known. I think he always wanted to have a boy first. And so I definitely grew up as a tomboy. And, you know, it was really hard for my mom. But after a certain point, actually, about 10 years later, she kind of had to come to grips with this was not a phase.
Can you tell me how did you come out to your mom?
Well, you know, I had my first love who broke my heart, and it was absolutely terrible. And my mom was wondering why I was all mopey and why I was crying. And I just, you know, I came out to her and I said, you know, Sandy and I broke up, and she really just wigged out, I guess that would be the word. And she just basically said, you know, you think you're going to live a life like the one you have? Well, you're going to see how you're going to suffer. And, you know, when she said that, it dawned to me that I had to find support quickly.
Well, you're planning a wedding now, right? So prior to this ruling, what were your thoughts about marriage?
You know, I always wanted to get married, and I knew it would never be to a man. I always wanted to get married to a woman. And it's been really absolutely amazing. My mom and my dad are really participating. My mom especially. She knows what colors she wants to have us have and what food she wants to see and who's going to be invited. My cousins have been really great. They saw us on the front page at L'Opinion about 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. And it was, they were just, you know, totally ecstatic. And I was getting phone calls from my family members. And my grandmother saw us on Despierta America also that same week and has been absolutely really thrilled and happy. And it's been really great. And that's just my family here. Her family in Mexico City during Christmas gave me a ring from their godmother to give to Elena and had me propose in front of them to her. And just about dragged us to City Hall, because in Mexico City, same-sex marriage is okay.
But the funny thing is, now you have everybody planning your wedding. I mean, what is there for you to do?
Show up.
Enjoy it.
Coral, let me ask you this. You know, family is very important in the Latino community, as we all know. So can the Latino sense of family, which we know is broad, come to also include same-sex couples anytime soon? Or is it going to take years, you think?
You know, it already includes same-sex couples. It may not be as visible as other, but, you know, we have to remember that there's thousands of Latino same-sex couples throughout the U.S. already raising children who need those protections, the protections that marriage brings. But yeah, you know, family is very much a part of our culture. And historically, marriage has been a signifier of, above all, love, you know, and I think same-sex marriage is illustrating that, and it's reinforcing what marriage is about. It's about love. It's about people being together, deciding to live a long life together, overcoming anything that comes their way, whether it is that homophobia that same-sex couples face on a daily basis in society, whether it's an illness, any hardship, like any other couple, you know, that's what couples face, and that's what people need to remember. Same-sex couples, gay couples, lesbian couples are facing year after year, you know, the same things that any other couple faces. And everyone should have the right to be able to join in matrimony and be able to be seen and respected as who they are.
Okay, well, thank you so much, both of you, for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Coral Lopez is a director for Bienestad, a community organization in Southern California, and Bridget Gonzalez is a contractor based in Los Angeles. For many same-sex couples, getting married is only the first step towards starting a new family. Many are looking to adoption. Over the past decade, there's been a dramatic increase in the number of Latino children placed in foster care in California. But now, many of those children have found new homes with Latino gay and lesbian couples. From California, Nancy Mullane has our story.
Lisa Martinez loves being a mom. Instead of fancy decorations and perfect furniture, she's filled her two-bedroom apartment with child-friendly furniture and framed photos of her children, her daughter Mariah, and adopted son, Kanye Elijah.
This is my man here, Kanye Elijah. This is when we first got him. This is adoption day with his little suit on.
A Puerto Rican and Filipino by birth, Martinez grew up in a close-knit, sprawling family, and says she always knew when she grew up, she'd have children of her own.
Going to the park for a picnic was 25, 30 people, and everybody potlucking and everybody parenting everybody else's kids, things like that. And that's what family is to me. That's what family meant to me, and family first and family forever.
But as a lesbian, she didn't quite know how that family was going to happen.
I wanted my kids my way, but it's an awful lot of hoops to jump through.
13 years ago, Martinez gave birth to her first child, Mariah, using artificial insemination. Then 3 years ago, like a growing number of Latino gays and lesbians, Martinez adopted Kanye, a 13-month-old foster child in need of a permanent home.
I knew that he was child number 6. They were all in the system, 2 older girls and then 3 boys and Kanye. All the boys have been adopted, but the 2 older girls are still in the system.
Over the past decade, there's been a dramatic shift of who is in that system. In 1998, more African-American children than any other ethnic group were taken from their parents and placed in foster care. But that demographic has shifted. In fact, it's flipped. Now 45% of all children in some kind of foster care in California are Latino.
It's a huge jump. Yeah, it's a huge jump.
Jill Jacobs is executive director of Family Builders by Adoption, the agency that helped Lisa Martinez find Kanye. Jacobs says of the 78,000 children and youth currently in the state's foster care system, 36,000 are Latino.
Latino children are the fastest growing group of children in the foster care system. We're not talking about children that are relinquished. We're talking about children who have been involuntarily removed from their birth family because they could not care for them.
There are so many Latino children living in foster homes throughout the country that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Resources, in collaboration with Adopt Us Kids, has launched an advertising campaign. Airing on Spanish television and radio, and appearing in Spanish-language publications, the ads reach out to Spanish-speaking families, encouraging them to adopt more Latino children.
Hay muchos niños en foster care esperando hacer realidad tu sueño de completar una familia.
One group of Americans who've stepped up to the plate to adopt the growing number of Latino children needing homes is gay and lesbian couples. Again, Jill Jacobs.
We have a huge increase in general in the number of gay, lesbian families that are coming in to adopt.
Like Lisa Martinez, many adoptive gay and lesbian parents are Latino. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Policy Institute reports same-sex Latino couples are much more likely to raise foster and adopted children than same-sex white couples.
One of the cultural elements about Latinos across all the different countries is the importance of family.
Dr. Eduardo Morales is professor of clinical psychology at the California School of Professional Psychology. He says for Latino gay and lesbians, adopting a child is a win-win situation.
They feel like they're having a family by having children, and then the other is taking care of an important need in the community, and that is the adoption and foster care of other children.
Hundreds of same-sex couples and their children lined the route of the recent Gay Pride Parade in San Francisco. Brian Espinoza, a professional chef, and Ivan Serdar, a dentist, stand with their 4-year-old daughter, Amelia.
I think we talked about it on our first date.
Well, not adoption specifically, but having children. Literally our first date.
Espinoza and Serdar both grew up with siblings. But Espinoza says as a Latino, he grew accustomed to being part of an enormous extended family with lots of children at the dinner table.
Just eating together. It can just be at home, at a table, together. That's all I wanted. And that's why I want more kids. There's not enough around our table yet.
In just a few weeks, the couple is adopting their second child. Espinoza sleeps with the cell phone, hoping they'll make it to the hospital in time for their soon-to-be son's birth. Today, 65,000, or 4% of all adopted children in the U.S., are being raised by gay and lesbian couples. Nationwide, more than 100,000 Latino foster children are still waiting for someone to adopt them. For Latino USA, I'm Nancy Mullane.
In a minute, El Guajiro del Son Cubano, a profile of Cuban guitarist Eliades Ochoa, coming up on Latino USA. No se vayan. Thank you. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Lakshmi Singh, in for Maria Hinojosa. In the late 1990s, the world rediscovered Cuban music as the musicians of the Buena Vista Social Club burst onto the international scene. The rustic cowboy hat-wearing Eliades Ochoa was a core member of the group and one of the youngest at the time, then 50 years of age. Since that initial success, the guitarist and singer has taken his guajiro, or country, sound to all corners of the globe. But as contributor, Reese Ehrlich recently found out Ochoa is still most at home in La Habana with guitar in hand.
Eliades Ochoa dons his signature cowboy hat and begins playing his custom-made guitar. He quickly admits that his trademark sombrero doesn't come from Cuba.
Los sombreros estos los compré la mayoría en México. Y en Estados Unidos compré como...
I've bought most of my hats in Mexico and in the U.S. I bought about 5 or 6 hats. But here in Cuba, we really don't wear this style. What you find in Cuba is smaller, like the style that tango musicians wear in Argentina.
Yo también hice un disco con Charlie Musuquay.
I also did an album with Charlie Musselwhite doing American blues. We named it Continental Drifter. I love this kind of original American music, music from the periphery. I like to listen to music that really represents a country, not the variations that come later. I want to hear the original.
Ochoa began playing professionally in 1973 in the eastern Cuban city of Santiago. He formed his current group, Cuarteto Patria, in 1978 and began touring internationally soon thereafter. But Ochoa's big breakthrough came in the late 1980s, even before the Buena Vista Social Club CD. He hooked up with Compay Segundo, who later became famous as the Buena Vista Social Club's cigar-chomping singer in the white suit. Back in the 1950s and 60s, Compay Segundo had been the second singer of a famous duet. But Ochoa says he had given up performing.
Hacía 20 o 20 pico de años que él no ejercía la música, estaba retirado por completo.
It had been some 20 years or so that he didn't do music. He was completely retired. And during that time, he had become a cigar maker. And I recalled how powerful Compay's music was, how good it was. So I tried to convince him to sing again and to show us all his music. And that's how we started singing, he and I. And I soon learned that we still had a lot to gain from Compay Segundo. And I couldn't imagine and refused to accept that with such talent, even still, that Compay was no longer doing music. So I had him moved out to Santiago de Cuba with me to work together, and he accepted, working with me in the Cuarteto Patria. That's when we first recorded El Chan Chan.
In 1986, Eliades Ochoa, Compay Segundo, and the Cuarteto Patria traveled to Washington, D.C. to perform at the Smithsonian. The group played the same kind of music that 10 years later took the world by storm. But back in 1986, no one even bothered to issue a CD. The music from this Smithsonian performance was issued only after the success of the Buena Vista Social Club.
Eso es.
Ochoa remains philosophical about the success of the Buena Vista Social Club CD in 1997.
Llegó a Buena Vista Social Club en un momento
The Buena Vista Social Club arrived at the perfect time. That's the first part. The second is, I think the album's promotion was excellent. And the film of the movie, The Buena Vista Social Club, that was a big part of it. Then suddenly we started selling hundreds of thousands of CDs. I can go to any theater in the world now, put up some announcements and posters that read, "Now playing Eliades Ochoa, one of the five stars of The Buena Vista Social Club," and the theater will fill up.
Eliades Ochoa has issued some half dozen CDs since Buena Vista. He had performed regularly in the U.S., but since 2003, the Bush administration has prohibited Cuban artists from playing as part of tightening the embargo against Cuba. So U.S. audiences have missed out on some of Ochoa's most innovative collaborations, such as the CD Cuba Africa. He performed with Mano de Bongo, a famous saxophonist from Cameroon. One day, when Ochoa was performing in southern France, the promoter asked if de Bongo could sit in.
So I said, "How can he play with me if he doesn't know my music?" So I talked to him through a translator. He said he was such a big fan of mine that he bought all my CDs. And he'd put them on, not only to listen, but to play along. And so this man said he did know my music from memory and could play along. So I smiled at him and said, "Excellent." So I started the concert, and when we were about halfway through the show, I announced that we had a very special guest. And he came out with his saxophone, and the people applauded like crazy. He was very well known.
Vanissero le chant de ralliement de toutes les tropiques de l'Afrique à Cuba!
Concert Ochoa realized that de Bongo's pop and jazz style merged well with Cuban country music. After all, both have roots in Africa. They decided to make a CD together.
We recorded the CD in 9 days. It was all descarga, jam sessions, played by ear, nothing more.
These days, Ochoa enjoys fame and financial success. He has houses in Santiago, Havana, and Madrid, all built on the success of the Buena Vista Social Club. But at heart, Eliades Ochoa remains a country singer, devoted to his homeland and his music. For Latino USA, I'm Reese Ehrlich, reporting from Havana.
And for this week, this has been Latino USA. I'm Lakshmi Singh. Latino USA is produced by Benjamin Jacob, Walter Morgan, Alex Avila, and Angela Maldonado. Our executive producer is Sean Collins. We had help this week from Marcos Najera and Klaus Anderson. Our listener comment line is 1-800-535-5533, and our email address is lusa@npr.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Lakshmi Singh. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world, at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.